So I'm going to talk about the reconnection of twisted flux tubes. This is really a continuation of work that Russ Dahlberg and Spiro Antiochus started in just the mid-90s, large extension of it. The motivation is, there are a couple motivations, and one is to look at reconnection in three dimensions. In two dimensions, or 2.5 dimensions, it's argued that you can get reconnection at pretty much any angle between the field lines. If you have two sheets of field coming together and they're of equal strengths, it doesn't matter what angle they're at. They can always reconnect. You can always find some anti-parallel field that will reconnect, and the field that's parallel in two sheets will just be carried along passively. The speed of reconnection will slow down as the sine of the angle between the two over two, just because the speed of reconnection depends on the Alphaine speed, and the portion of the magnetic field that's reconnecting gets smaller and smaller as you bring the two fields into parallel. So it's pretty simple, but the question is, does field reconnect at any angle in three dimensions? So we can look at that with twisted flux tubes. The second motivation is in solar physics. There are a lot of papers written about suggesting that flares could be the result of coronal flux tubes colliding with each other and reconnecting, or flux tubes emerging and reconnecting with overlying field. And the third motivation is just that in the Sun-Earth magnetic environment, at least, pretty much everything can be, at its most fundamental level, brought down to a flux tube. So you can think of anything reconnecting as flux tubes reconnecting. So it's pretty much generally applicable. So what I'm going to do is I have a MHD code. It's a spectral code, three dimensions, periodic in all three dimensions. This is a picture of the beginning of one of the simulations I'm going to do. This is a pair of flux tubes. Both of them are gold foil flux tubes, so they're force-free inside the flux tube. They're isolated, so there's field-free plasma out here. This is a profile of the twist field with radius, and then the axial field with radius. And this is about where I've cut it off here with the field strength b squared over 9. So that's the isosurface that I've shown. These fields are twisted with about a wave number, they have about 10 twists from the bottom to the top of the simulation box here, so they're very twisted. I'm looking at the extreme case where what happens when you have a really twisted flux tube. And then I'm going to look at just a lot of different angles where this top flux tube can be at various different angles. I name the flux tubes by how they're twisted. So the back flux tube is always a right twisted flux tube. The front flux tube is either right or left twisted. And then there's an angle which I discretize in factors of pi over 4. So there's n pi over 4, 8 different angles that these can be at. And I name them RLN for right, left at angle n, or RRN for right, right at angle n. What else? This is visco-resistive MHD, so the Lundquist numbers, which is the resistivity and viscosity normalized by the Alphaine speed and a radius, or the radius is about this radius. It's about a fifth of the flux tube radius, because that's kind of the scale on which the magnetic field goes down to a third of its maximum. So the Lundquist numbers are about 600. And then I push the tubes together at the center with a stagnation point flow with a speed of about a 40th of the Alphaine speed, and just watch what happens.
What is the background plasma density and temperature?
It's uniform. Uniform. There's a pressure. There's a pressure difference. That's the only thing that changes. So there's a pressure balance. I cut off the flux tubes.
So there's a uniform pressure.
I cut off the flux tubes right here, and there's a uniform pressure outside and a uniform pressure inside that's different than the outside pressure. So that balances the drop in magnetic field at the outside of the tube.
So there is pressure both inside and outside.
There's pressure both inside and outside.
And how large it is compared to the magnetic pressure?
The beta on the axis is about a half. So it's it's about... Of course, outside it's infinity.
So this is what?
There's no field, so outside beta is.
As you go out from the center to the edge, your beta drops. Right?
Beta drops, yes. I mean, beta goes up.
It increases.
Beta goes up.
To
right.
Infinity.
Yeah.
So it's compressible then?
It's compressible.
And you said you cut the tubes at some
radius?
Where the field is non-zero, so that you have a current sheet?
The field is non-zero. There's a current sheet right here. This is the edge of the field.
What is it referring to?
This is the ISO surface that I've drawn here, and it's also the scaling that I use to normalize the Lundquist number.
Oh, okay.
So,
but still, there is a current sheet at particle one.
There's a current sheet out there. It's not a sharp drop off because it's smoothed out a little bit by the code, but effectively that's a sharp drop off.
Is that an energy equation?
Yes. There's viscous heating. Resistive heating, pressure terms.
No
radiative cooling. Okay, so this is the first. Well, this is the first thing I'll talk about. There's two different simulations. The top is one simulation. The bottom is another simulation. This is near the beginning of the simulation. This is what I call an RL0. So there's a. This is a right-hand twisted tube. This is a left-hand twisted tube. I'm pushing them together at the center. They're parallel to each other, so the angle is zero. And they just bounce off. You can see here, looking at the field lines, the field lines are actually exactly anti-parallel here. Parallel here, right? So you wouldn't expect any reconnection. Sure enough, you don't get any. They just bounce off. It's kind of fun that they kink, because the gold coil is actually slightly kink unstable. That's about it. With one tube? If you have one tube and let it run for a long time, it doesn't kink. But if you perturb it with the right wave number, it does kink. It just means there's not enough noise in the simulation to start off with to excite this kink. But if you put in the noise, it will kink.
Isn't it the case that a gold foil tube by itself, although it's kink unstable, very, very close to the stability limit?
It's very, very close to the stability limit. And you can see here, this is essentially the saturation of the kink instability. So it forms a nice helical tube, but it's not very exciting. It's not catastrophic or anything.
Does this go in time A, C, B, and D?
No, sorry. This is A and B is one is one simulation. C and D is another simulation. Though they look identical. They're almost identical. The difference between the top and the bottom is that, which tube is it? This tube has been the sign of the field and the sign of the twist have been flipped. So this is actually a right hand and a right hand flux tube that are oppositely directed.
What is number four?
Number four means that they're oppositely directed, so the angle is 4π/4. And the zero means it's 0π/4. And in this case, they're also oppositely directed, effectively. And you get the same thing, you get kinks. So in this case, the kinks are both right-hand kinks. In this case, one is a left-hand kink and one is a right-hand kink. Otherwise, they're the same. And in this case, it is in some ways the most dramatic case. Effectively, in the previous slide, you had an RL0 where they were parallel to each other and nothing happened. If you flip them around by 180 degrees, then the fields are anti-parallel when they come together. And you can see them starting to reconnect here. This white field line goes around both of them. So it wraps around the two of them and sucks them in even farther than they were pushed in by the flow. And you quickly get at least an isosurface that looks separated from these two flux tubes that are reconnecting like this and going up and down. That quickly disappears. All the flux in there annihilates itself. And you get this loop. Since it's periodic, it's connected from the top to the bottom. So if you attach those to each other and look up from the bottom, this is what the field lines around here look like. So you've got left-hand twisted field lines on this side from this tube, and right-hand twisted field lines on this side from this tube. But then, what have I done from here? What have I done from here to here?
What is C?
C is the time snapshot after B. So this isosurface here has disappeared because the field is annihilated. And this is just this is just the loop, what happens to this loop here. And effectively, this is just an oval loop going from top to bottom. I mean, because it's periodic. So this is attached down to here.
The color here is just the
this is
energy density.
Isosurface at the peak magnetic field over 3. Made to look solid. The behind the field lines here is actually the magnetic energy density. The white intensity there is magnetic field density.
B squared.
So going from CD, you changed from sort of a one isosurface picture to several isosurfaces?
No, these are field lines. This is no longer isosurfaces. It's field lines. These are the same times.
You look from a different angle?
I'm looking from a different angle.
From under.
Underneath, I believe. So we'll see. X, Y, Z. Yeah, from on the top. Z is pointing into the page. So what I wanted to point out here is that you have oppositely twisted field lines on either side of this oblong shape. And then as time goes on, the torsional alpha faint waves just dissipate those away or cancel them out, so that by the end you have no twist or very little twist. Maybe there might be a little bit. No, there's not even any linking here. It's just an unlinked Fox tube. So you get a lot of energy release there, both from the field lines getting shorter and annihilating in the center, and from the twist canceling out. This is a somewhat less special case. The tubes aren't exactly anti-parallel anymore. This is rotating 1 by 45 degrees. So this is 3 pi over 4 instead of the previous, which was 4 pi over 4. So this looks like maybe a more realistic picture of what you might expect on the sun if you had identical flux tubes colliding with each other at some angle. And you get a similar reconnection at the center where they collide with each other. You get these loops that form and then break off from this center section and start slingshotting up and down here. Get a little bit of some kind of an S shape in there that quickly disappears. It's just, I think, imperfectly reconnected field lying in the center. And then it just slingshots down to where it's just forming an almost straight tube, again, lying crossing the top and the bottom. So I do the same trick again. I attach the top to the bottom and look at the field lines. And it's, you have to look carefully, but you can actually see left-hand field here, and then it switches to right-hand field in the center, and then it's left-hand field again out here. That essentially comes from, make sure I get this right, this left-hand field goes up here and then connects to this right-hand field and connects to that left-hand field and forms this. And then the same thing happens. It all cancels out, or almost all of it cancels out. There's actually a bit of left-hand field left over because this left-hand tube is longer than this right-hand tube, so there's more left-hand twist.
Now, you've gone from having two distinct flux tubes to having a single flux tube through the magic of periodic boundary conditions.
Through the magic of periodic boundary conditions, yeah.
What is the meaning of that? In the real thing, don't you be going someplace else? And,
yep.
This what's is the meaning of the twist that you're telling us?
ENF.
Oh, aside from the periodic boundary conditions, you can just say this splits into two tubes, and I'm going to now follow this tube.
Okay.
And this is the tube. There's actually, the rest of the tube is down here. So there's one tube down here and one tube up here. And I'm just going to follow this one and look at the twist in that tube. And the meaning is that I've had a right-hand twisted and left-hand twisted tube come together. They reconnected, and all of a sudden you have one tube, this tube down here, that has both right and left-hand twist at different parts of it, and then those just cancel out. This is them canceling out here. And there was a net excess of left-hand twist when those two reconnected. So there's a net left-hand twist
just
left
because
over.
It's longer.
Just because it's longer by a factor of root 2.
The way I understand it is, after you connection, you have a strongly
bent tube, right.
Flux tube bent, so it's like a relational fan wave, basically, right?
Yeah.
And then it should damp on the viscous time scale?
Yeah, it should.
Does it actually goes back and forth several times?
I haven't seen that, but I haven't looked on a very short time scale. I haven't seen a lot of waves. These are
times that
These are Alphane crossing times for essentially this radius here. So it's so this is happening very slowly, effectively in Alphane crossing times.
So you think so it might be that between C and D there were several motions.
Yeah, there could be. This was about 500 Alphane crossing times. So, and I don't. I mean, these files are really big, so I don't put out output files that I can look at like this more than once every probably 50 or 100 Alphane crossing times. So,
sort of confusing. You're squishing this tube against the wall of your boundary.
There's not a wall. It's periodic, so it can go through the wall. If it just moved down here and wanted to keep going, it would appear on the top and just move down like this. If I had imposed a net flow or something.
But I don't see in a real case that the two tubes are growing away from each other, flattening out and straightening it out the way you're sure.
Well, if you thought of doing a different experiment where this was line tied to the photosphere here or something.
I can see one side would be like
that. One side. And if this was also line tied, so if you thought this of wrapping it over, this is a like the Uzo Parker projection of, you know, when Parker talks about
okay, so
the field. So this is the photosphere at the top and the bottom. This should be curved going from one to the other. And you have these two come together. And then you've got one tube that snaps down towards the photosphere on this side of the simulation, another one that snaps down to the photosphere on that side of the simulation. And eventually, you know, they probably won't flatten out because you've got boundary conditions that say there's a certain amount of vertical field. But up to a certain point between these two, it'll look pretty similar, I would imagine.
Without twist, nothing of this would happen then, or what?
I have only just started looking at the case without twist. And what happened, I don't have a picture of that, but what happened was effectively the two tubes pushed into each other, flattened out, because there's no twist to keep them in a circular, in a, you know, a tube cross-section anymore. So they flattened out into a flat sheet. And then kind of bounced back a little bit. A little bit of reconnection happened during that time where they were in contact. But you know, I've only just started looking at that case. But it looks like it really helps to have some kind of twist to keep the tubes together.
I think the untwisted case is really important. I mean,
yeah.
You know, you'd like to know the answer of what two tubes come together. And if you want to make rules, you know, the rules
yeah.
need a reconnector and just bounce
yeah.
off each other.
I'm definitely going to look at that again, but I have to say I ignored it in the beginning because that looked like just an extension of 2D to me. But the thing in 2D is everybody, most of the time, it's you impose a velocity, it's always driven. What I'm doing here is I have initial velocity and I just let things go. So they're free to come in and bounce off. I think if I'd driven those two untwisted flux tubes together and forced them to keep going, I think they would have reconnected pretty much. Like, I mean, essentially in the end they formed just a current sheet. A big flat plane of field, so that would have been the 2D case. Mm-hmm. But since I wasn't driving them together, they kind of bounced off. So
this simulation of gold oil model.
Yeah, this is gold oil. So, but I'm gonna look at that later. Yeah. This is the velocity. Well, it's a somewhat weird plot, but this is velocity isosurfaces. So places where the velocity is larger than a certain amount, where the certain amount is the peak velocity in here divided by 4. So there, in the beginning of the simulation, there's no velocity that large. Then at this point, where they start reconnecting, there are these little maybe helical velocities right at the reconnection region. And then later they start moving away and you can see this is the part where they're slingshotting up to the top and bottom.
And is that consistent with an outflow? Are those outflow jets?
It certainly looks like it. I haven't looked at the direction, but if you just look at the, I mean, it looks to me, well, yeah, I guess they're outflow jets. Essentially, it's just, to me at least, it says the same thing as this picture does if you look from one frame to the next. I mean, from here to here, this section of the tube has moved up quite a lot. So there's just plasma sitting in there that's moving up, and that's what you're seeing here is the plasma moving up in that corner of the flux tube. So if you want to call that an outflow jet. I mean, I guess that is what the outflow jets are. So, and it's close to the, it's about two-thirds the initial alphane speed.
The term tends to be applied to steady state reconnection. This is
right.
Transient reconnection.
Transient. So
the outflow jet is just going to be a slingshotting away of the,
yeah,
of the reconnected flux.
Yeah. So that's what it is.
Is the net velocity in this box zero?
No. No. In this box, it's, well, you can see in the end you have a single twisted flux tube with a twist of what, two or three.
Yeah.
So there's a net left-hand twist. And the other simulations where I do two right-handed tubes, there's...
Oh, yeah, nice. But they're both, they have opposite times, I mean, opposite twists, right?
Yep.
Right. And just because one is longer than the other.
It's because one's longer than the other. And the other simulations I do where they're both right-handed, they're, the twist doesn't cancel out, so there's a much larger net velocity. Well, because actually, if I show this, this shows it better. This, when they first come together, what happens is this field line reconnects, and you now have a field line that goes around both flux tubes, and there's a tension. It's like having a rubber band around the two of them now, so it just brings them closer in together. And as the next field line reconnects, you have more and more of those, so that's why they don't bounce apart. Because as soon as they come together, all of a sudden they're tied. All of a sudden they're tied together.
Something seems really weird about this length argument, because it seems to me like if you replicate your boxes, you know, use a huge number of boxes, I mean, ultimately the tubes are both infinitely long. It seems like there should be
well, one tube will be infinitely long, the other one will be square root of two times infinitely long.
Well, if you count the number of twists per box.
Yeah, that's kind of a meaningful
rotate
thing.
Rotate your coordinate system, right? And then you get the opposite answer.
You'd have to. I don't think that would work.
Yeah, I think that's right. Because if you did rotate the box, I think you'd get more of the spacing between the tubes is not the same in the two directions. I think
right.
It's farther apart in one diagonal, maybe the diagonal direction than it is in the.
Let's see if I can draw a picture of it.
So the diagonal ones, which are longer, are actually part of the part.
I don't know if that. I don't know if I can. I can just look at this and help.
I see. So they're.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So the distance from here to here is a factor of square root of two, larger than the distance from here to over here. Yeah, I didn't point that out. There's, because it's periodic, there's just a little bit in the corners from this part. Okay. So far we've seen a bounce and what I call a slingshot. And this is another case. This is actually the first interesting case I've shown where they're both equally twisted in the same direction. So in this case, they're both right-hand twisted. They're parallel to each other, so they're both pointing, going from the top to the bottom. And in between the two of them, they're very close to, the fields are very close to anti-parallel. So they again reconnect. Actually, you can see this field line goes around both of them and wraps around here. This field line starts up here, goes behind the two of them, and back around. So it's again tying the two of them together so that they're going to keep reconnecting. And then from this point on, they just reconnect and slowly merge into one single flux tube.
Is there like a critical amount of twist so that the tie is strong enough to keep them together?
I imagine, yeah. I haven't haven't thought much about that or done the simulations, but I'm sure there is, yeah.
So once they're tied together, they're going to reach that?
Yeah.
They're what?
Well, these are two columns flowing in the same direction.
No, they're not attracting because they're isolated in the beginning. So there's zero net current. If you draw a circle around here, there's zero net current. So there's no current from here interacting with. Sorry?
Once they touch each other.
Yeah, you could say that. Essentially, you can look at it two ways. Once they touch each other, the currents are interacting with the field, or once they touch each other, they've got field lines wrapping around the two of them. Either way, there's suddenly an attraction. It's probably the same thing.
These have all the stagnation flow point, right? This
stagnation point flow.
But you just initialize the
flow. I just initialize, right, and then.
And then there's no stagnation.
And then they're on their own, right.
Do you have a resolving power to study the reconnection region in detail?
No, I wouldn't say so. This is these are 128 cubed simulations. I should be able to do it in the future if I want to, because there's another code at NRL that Rick DeVore is writing. It's got adaptive mesh refinement, and we could refine on currents, essentially. That's what we plan to do. But at this stage, I wouldn't want to say too much about the structure of the reconnection region. So here again is a somewhat more interesting case of the merge, or maybe more realistic, where they're not exactly parallel to each other, but at some angle. And essentially the same thing happens. The two of them come together, reconnect, the field lines wrap around both tubes. You get this reconnection region at the center that actually pulls the rest of the tube together. And it slowly zips up until you get to this point. And at this point, the periodic boundary conditions come in and make things, stop them from zipping up, because essentially this tube here has to connect to this, and this one has to connect off at the corner up here, so that there's this very large angle between the flux tubes that they can't zip up anymore. So, but essentially in between the two, there's one flux tube. And this is not, well, the periodic boundary condition is not what you're going to find on the sun, but I'd argue you could do the same, argue that there's a photosphere here and here and line tighter flux tubes and get the same thing. If you've got two arches slightly off center, they're going to merge into one flux tube at the top until they get close to the photosphere at the bottom and then split off into two flux tubes. So that's pretty neat, like that one. And then the fourth case, this is what Russ and Spiro found back in 97, I guess. This is the really weird case. This is where the two flux tubes, two right-handed flux tubes at an angle of 6π/4 come together. They actually reconnect in two places, here and here, and essentially tunnel right through each other. So that by this point, the flux tube that started on the back is now in the front. The reconnection at this point from an angle looking, I think, from this direction. You can see how they're reconnecting in two places. So here's a snapshot. They've come together, they're reconnecting here, and they bulge out, and they're reconnecting again on the back side. There's another place that looks exactly like this. And effectively, this reconnection doesn't involve these little side lobes. These just sit there and eventually become attached to the opposite flux tube. So they're not really tunneling, they're just exchanging these little sections right here. So this flux tube eventually becomes connected to this part of the tube, and then back to itself. So it looks like this in the end, where this used to be in the other flux tube, and then they've just tunneled right through each other.
So how much energy gets, magnetic energy gets?
Well, it's a little bit hard to say, because these take a very long time in terms of diffusion time. So you can normalize, this is the magnetic energy. The RL0 is the case where it bounced. So you could say there wasn't much energy release except for what diffused away. And that brought it down to about 30% of the initial magnetic energy. The tunnel is very close to that. It's just a very small difference. As with the merge, which was the RR0. And the slingshot, goes down very close to zero. But this is the one where effectively the whole tube was destroyed by the reconnection.
Did you end up with one tube?
There were two slingshot cases I showed. One where they pretty much annihilated, and one where there was one tube left over. And this is the one I'm just happened to be showing, the one where they annihilated. So, of course, for the one where there was some left over, it's not as low as this. And actually, I can show that in the next slide. So, before I go on, what I'm going to show in the next slide is essentially this number back here, or actually at 750, at a time of 750, what the magnetic energy is that's left over, and also the peak kinetic energy during the simulation for all of the simulations that I did. This is for oppositely twisted flux tubes. The azimuthal angle is just the angle of between the two flux tubes. So this is the integer n that I've been showing. The radial coordinate is energy. The solid line is twice the peak kinetic energy. The dashed line is the magnetic energy left at 750 alphane times. And this is the 30% of, they're both normalized by the magnetic energy at the initial state. So this is 30%, and that's 15%. And this is the slingshot tube that had a flux tube left over at the end. This is the one that annihilated. These are symmetric about this axis, so this is the same thing here. There's also a slingshot at this angle, and then down at these three angles, there's no slingshot. There's just a bounce. So this actually addresses the question of the 2D case, where you could get reconnection at any angle. Certainly, for these flux tubes, it looks like you need an angle greater than 90 degrees, you know, an angle in the top half of this picture here, between the field lines. I should say that for the oppositely twisted identical flux tubes, that the angle between the flux tubes is actually the angle between the field lines when they come together, just the way the symmetries work there. So,
define kinetic energy
is the integral of the velocity rho v squared over the box.
Over the box? Just a scalar.
It's a scalar, yeah.
It's not a flow.
No, it's the velocity squared. So, again, it looks like if you want to release.
Initially, velocities were zero, right?
No, initially the velocities were
this is
the initial velocity here. And this is the equally twisted, the like twisted flux tubes. It's a pretty dramatic difference. You can see that this is again is a twice the kinetic energy. There's not a large peak like there was in this case. And the magnetic energy doesn't have a large dip either. So these you wouldn't expect too much. These are bounces with a little bit of merging over here. But the cases where they merged and tunneled, there's also not a lot of energy release. There's a peak in the kinetic energy here that's, you know, larger than the rest of them at least. And there's a small dip, I think, in the magnetic energy here, but there's not a whole lot released compared to the slingshot. But of course, in the slingshot, you're canceling opposite twist. That's really easy to do. In this case, you're doing somewhat minor things.
Mark, I'm a little confused. You said there's not much energy released, but 70% of the.
Yeah, this is. Yep, this is.
What happened to the 70%?
Diffused away. The time here is 750 alphane crossing times, and the Lundquist number is about 600. So you should expect about a third, two-thirds of the magnetic energy to be lost in 600 alphane crossing times, and that's about what happens. So this is, I mean, for the bounce where nothing, you can see nothing at all happened except for a little bit of a kink, you lost 70% of the energy. So in order to really pin down how much energy you're losing from reconnection, I need to go to higher Lundquist numbers.
What is the alphane crossing time?
It's
one.
Yeah. And these are in units of alphane crossing times. Okay, so The one mystery that I'm left from this with is, why does the tunnel happen? The rest of them, the slingshot and the merge, they seem to make sense. You want to merge a flux tube into two flux tubes into one, you can lose energy that way. You slingshot the tubes, you cancel the twist, and you make the tube shorter. But why would a flux tube want to tunnel through and just be the same flux tube on the other side? And actually, at Dana's suggestion, I started looking at the relative helicity and seeing what that had to say about it. And for flux tubes, the relative helicity, first of all, is just the helicity for a box where the flux tubes are going through the box. So you essentially subtract off a reference field and figure out what the helicity is. You don't know what exactly the helicity is, but you can figure out the changes exactly. So this is the relative helicity. It's defined by Berger. There's a mutual helicity and a twist helicity, one for each flux tube. So there's a factor of two here. And I'm going to assume for the moment that this is constant when the reconnection happens. So the mutual helicity depends on the angle by delta by which the two flux tubes rotate about each other. I'll show that in the next slide. The twist helicity depends by the angle depends on the angle by which the field lines twist around the axis. So it's essentially, if n is the number of times the field lines twist around the axis from one end of the tube to the other in your box, that's the twist helicity.
So where does the asymmetry in the length of the tube come into this? You think, did that affect the relative helicity?
Yeah. For the argument I'm going to go through here, I'm just going to look at the tunnel case where they're both the same length.
Okay.
But I've done it in more general form. You put the length in there, you can put all sorts of different things in there. Okay. They all have an effect. But to make it simple, we're going to assume they're the same length. So what we're going to look at is the relative helicity, which is just the flux times twice the number of the windings of field lines around the axis, plus the angle by which the flux tubes wind about each other, which is this next slide here. So here is a schematic of two flux tubes. The field is going from left to right in both flux tubes. They leave the box here, or they enter the box here and leave the box over here. And how do you calculate this angle by which they rotate? You draw a vector from the end of tube 1 to the end of tube 2 at each, this is the z direction along the tube, or from one end of the box to the other. You draw this vector at each point from one end of the box to the other and figure out by how much this vector rotates from one angle to the other. And that's shown here. Here's A naught to B naught at this end, and here is AL to BL at the other end. So the tubes essentially rotate, if I can do this, from here, they rotate like this around and end up like that. And this is just what the angle delta is showing. They rotated like this, to go from one end to the other. So that's the mutual helicity is defined by this delta. And it's actually measured where clockwise is positive. So I'm going to call this angle between these two delta naught. And then the angle by which the flux tubes rotate is negative delta naught. So the mutual helicity here is negative delta naught over 2 pi times phi squared. And this is just what you compare the rest of the states to. So next I'm going to show the slingshot. So what happens there is effectively this tube comes up, reconnects with this tube, and leaves here. And the same for this tube. This goes in and leaves there. It ends up looking like that. They look almost parallel. You can see from the projection on the bottom, they actually cross each other there in that projection. And when you draw the vectors from tube, what I've called B, to tube A now, and follow that along, the endpoints are the same. I've held the endpoints fixed. So these two lines are the same, but the arrows on the vectors may be different. So it starts out from here, and it rotates a little bit over to here. And effectively, this is the angle I call delta naught here. So the angle it's rotated by now is pi minus delta naught. And effectively, the angle is changed by pi. You look puzzled, Brian.
Yeah. just working through it all this often.
Can you please come back to the tubes?
Yeah.
If these tubes were straight lines, you would expect delta to be equal to pi, right? If the
If they were, they are straight lines. You mean if they were parallel?
No, they touch at the point. Straight lines touching at the point, and then
touching at a point. You'd expect.
Well, they are touching at the point, right?
No, just. What if they exactly coincide with one another, I guess?
Oh, I see. Yeah. No, right. You would expect.
Just two parallel lines crossing.
Yeah, I think you're right. If there were no difference between the two, the angle would be pi from one side to the other. I'm sorry, if these were not separated by any distance.
Right.
Yeah, I've just made this somewhat more general. You get the same result in the end. This just applies for flux tubes which have a finite radius.
But then, of course, if they're touching, it's pi or minus pi, depending on which side they touch.
Yeah. They still have to be on one side or the other. So it's pi or minus
continuity
pi.
Continuity of capacity across each other.
Yeah. I suppose I could have just done that to make it simpler, but this is the figure I had. So, and essentially, in your explanation, you started off with pi, and at this point, there would be zero because they're parallel and they're not touching. And the difference between the two is pi. That's what matters. So in this case, it's pi minus delta naught. You've got an extra factor of pi. And then when they tunnel, as Dana said, or they're on the other side. So now you would have negative pi, or there'd be a factor of 2 pi difference. And in this case, where they're finite radius, you get this angle here, which is 2 pi minus delta naught. So you've got a difference of 2 pi. Is that a question on the way? So here's the summary of what at least helicity conservation tells you. This is the initial helicity, twice the twist minus this angle delta naught over pi times phi squared. You assume that the initial, the slingshot, and the tunnel helicity are all the same. This is the slingshot helicity. Again, the minus delta naught plus 1. This is the pi factor we were talking about, 1 for each flux tube. And the tunnel helicity has a plus 2. Which is a 2 pi factor we were talking about. So what that tells you is the number of turns in the slingshot is the number of turns initially minus a half for each flux tube. The number of turns in the tunnel is the number of turns initially minus 1 for each flux tube. So you now know how much twist there should be in your flux tubes at the end after they've reconnected. And then you can go on and calculate what the energies are.
So N could be a signed number. Right?
N could be a signed number.
If they twist around to the left, N would be negative. And by losing one term, they actually increase the amount of twist they have.
Yes. And you could also, what I've assumed here is that you could go backwards, I guess. You could also go from this state to the initial state, and then you would add a turn of twist to each one of them. So to calculate the energy, I made a few assumptions. First is that this is a standard field profile. Actually, I'm going to, in the next slide, assume that this is a Gold-Hoyle profile. But just some magnitude of the field times a function with a scale length and the radius. This is a twist times the radius times the axial field. So it's a constant twist field. Helicity conservation, which we've been talking about. Mass conservation, so you don't lose mass out of the flux tubes when they reconnect. You don't lose flux out of the flux tubes when they reconnect. And actually, from mass and flux conservation, as the flux tubes are reconnecting, each section that reconnects, you can show that these scale lengths, lambda times r of the final state, is equal to the initial lambda naught times r naught, which comes in handy. In particular, you can plug it in here and set gamma 1-1, these flux integrated functions to be equal to each other. This is what you find out when you plug in the RR6 numbers, essentially the state that tunneled, see what happens, see what kind of an energy prediction you have. So I integrated b squared over 8 pi and found the energy. This is gamma 1-2 is the axial energy, effectively. Gamma 3-2 is the twist energy. So this is the state that you're normalizing by. In the slingshot, what you find is there's a factor of the slingshot length over the initial length squared times the axial energy. So as the field becomes shorter, as LS becomes smaller than L naught, you lose energy. So the field lines are just becoming shorter. The axial field lines are becoming shorter. For the twist energy, it actually goes the other way. It's L0 over LS. So if you think of having your slinky and compressing it, or your spring and compressing it, you make it shorter, the energy goes up. And in this case, the energy goes down because you're losing half a turn of twist from the flux tube in a slingshot flux tube over the initial flux tube. So this is how the slingshot energy compares to the initial state. The tunnel energy, I just assume that the length is the same as the initial state. It's approximately the same, at least in this configuration. So it only loses energy by losing one turn of twist. But this tells you what the answer to that question was. Why does it tunnel? Well, if it loses a turn of twist and keeps the same length, the energy goes down if it's positive twist to start with. So this is a plot of energy for these three states versus the twist number. This is the initial state. This is the tunnel state. So you can see that it loses energy for pretty much all twists until you get down to a twist of a half, at which point it has a twist of a half, it loses a twist of one, it ends up with a twist of negative a half, so there's no net gain or loss. And these two are for the slingshot under two assumptions, which I will show and then come back to this slide. So this is the initial length, and this is the minimum length, which is you assume that the tubes are crossing like this, and they do the 45 degree angle when they slingshot out. But that's not necessarily the best case. You could have a case where the field is so twisted that it doesn't want to be that short. So if you allow it to be any length in between these two, you can just minimize the energy, find what the optimal length is, minimizing the energy, and plot that here, and then use the constraint that it can't get any shorter than this geometrically smallest length, and then use this length to figure out the slingshot energy. So that's this curve right here, is the slingshot energy as a function of twist. This is the slingshot energy as a function of twist, where you assume it takes the shortest length that it could when it slingshots. So I guess we can kind of ignore this, but it's interesting to see that actually there's, if you make it be as short as it possibly can, you're going to add its energy. But if you allow it to be kinked, for example, it can take on a lesser energy. Now what happens is that all the way down to a twist of about 2.5, the slingshot has more energy in the end than the tunnel. So the tunnel, if the tubes are smart enough, is going to happen, or should happen, all the way down to this point, at which point the slingshot then loses more energy than the tunnel. Because the twist is so low that the fact the slingshot can make your tube shorter overcomes the fact that the tunnel loses more twist than the slingshot. Up at larger twists, making the tube shorter is actually a disadvantage. So the slingshot doesn't gain anything. So the question is, was that a question?
Flux tubes are sentient.
The flux tubes are sentient. The question is, how sentient are the flux tubes? Do they slingshot? Do they tunnel all the way down to 2.5 and then slingshot? Well, here's a twist of 6. They start to slingshot here, it looks to me like. But then they start coming back together again and end up tunneling. So still at a twist of 6. It looks like we're close already, but it still tunnels. And that twist of 5.5 turns out to be the point at which it actually does slingshot instead of tunneling. So this is about a factor of 2 larger than what we predicted. So it's not what the energy predicts, but the energy method does predict you get a tunnel at large twist and a slingshot at low twist. And you can actually see here, this is the tube is kinked because it doesn't want to be the shortest length possible. It wants to be a little bit longer than this shortest distance between these two. And you can go to even lower twist, slingshot of 3, it definitely slingshots. It takes the shortest length possible. And that's that. So the one thing I could say about this is you lose a lot of magnetic energy during a simulation, and you probably lose a lot of helicity also during a simulation. So even just from diffusion. So it's not really fair to say that the helicity at the beginning is the same as the whole city at the end. You've actually lost quite a lot. So that could be the reason why it's the transition is at a higher twist.
Does that work in the right sense?
It does, yeah. Essentially, if you just, in this code, if you just have a flux tube with a twist of 10 all by itself sitting there and let it run for 600 Alfan crossing times, you end up with a twist of 4 or 5 or so in the end of the simulation. So you're not really simulating a twist of 10. You're simulating something that is going from 10 down to 4.
Isn't, if you have periodic boundary conditions, isn't the current's maybe not conserved,
because
I guess the current is
resistant
dissipation.
Well, and there's also a net zero current, too.
There's
a return current on the outside to make the twist, so you don't get twist going off to infinity.
Right.
The view that you were talking about, the transmit that, I mean, if you have the single loop twist, the diffusion would just make that initial curve of magnetic field versus this that you're going to make it flat. Is that what happened? Is that the
you mean the magnetic field versus radius?
Yeah.
Which, no, that would be, it would still be a Goldwell flux tube. I mean, that the profile for the axial magnetic field is the same, but if you don't have two flux tubes interacting, if it's just one flux tube sitting there by itself,
uh-huh.
For example, if you're looking for the kink instability,
yeah.
You see that the twist, if you trace field lines at the end of the run, they wind around the axis fewer times than it did initially, because the currents that make the twist have dissipated somewhat during the simulation. So, that's the slingshot. And then I have one more picture to show, which was motivated by conversations Dana and I had together about whether you would get a slingshot for an untwisted tube. And you certainly wouldn't predict it for a case where you start off with the two of them straight, but if they're bent around each other, so that by tunneling through each other or slingshotting, one, you could get a shorter length. In fact, if they were bent around each other like two big U-hooks, tunneling would be much better for them. So I did a simulation of that to see what would happen. And this is what you get. So this is the initial state here. It's periodic again. You've got these two kind of oblong O-shaped loops. There are two of them. This one goes off and comes in here again. These are the field lines. So you can see how they're linked. No twist at all. Actually, there's no helicity because they both, this one, I forget what the sign is, but this one links in a positive way and this one links in a negative way, so there's zero net helicity. Very quickly, they're like rubber bands, there's no twist at all, they just want to become really short, so they quickly slam into each other and start reconnecting. By this point, it's just a mess, but you can look at field lines and see you're getting some that have slingshot, they've only reconnected once, well, actually, they've reconnected twice, but they've reconnected once in this area here, so that the field lines now go like this. And you've still got, you know, some of the initial field lines that wind around each other and some that go in and out here and in and out here. And then by the end, you've got this state here where about two-thirds of the flux is up here and down here. Two-thirds of what you started with, unsigned flux, is just going straight across the tube. So they've slingshot. And well, there's very little flux here. So a third of the flux has disappeared. That's possibly flux that's tunneled, but who knows? I haven't seen it tunnel. These are just initial field lines still. Haven't done anything. And then there are these funny field lines that wind around both flux tubes, or both what was the initial flux tubes. These are just field lines that have reconnected twice and end up forming these weird balls here. But that's what it looks like to me. It's a neat simulation, but it does seem to say that you don't really get a tunnel for straight tubes. For untwisted.
So, I mean, the pathological thing about the untwisted field lines is they're reconnecting at two spots because there's a loop, and they're reconnecting at the same time.
Yeah.
So the thing goes from being interlinked to being unlinked.
Yeah.
It reconnected at one spot, and then it wound its way so it was on the far side of the reconnecting tube now.
Yeah.
Be out of the water yet.
Yeah, that's definitely something that the twist helps you with. It's not, you know, it actually can run into the, can reconnect at different times and run into the same flux tube at a different spot. That's what you really need, is the same field line hits the other flux tube at two spots, and then it has the option of reconnecting twice. In this case, it only hits at one spot, so it doesn't have the option. Even though it'd be much better for it to tunnel, it doesn't, because it just can't. So that should be it. In summary, you get four types of twisted flux tube reconnection: the bounce, the slingshot, the merge, and the tunnel. Slingshot is the most energetic, mostly because you can annihilate opposite signs of twist. You can look at helicity conservation to predict what kind of or how much twist you'll get in reconnected flux tubes, and then use that to calculate the energy. And that tells you that the tunnel should happen when it does happen, and that the slingshot should happen when in the RR6 case for very low twist. And that is indeed what happens, but the transition is at the wrong place. So maybe that's due to helicity loss. I'm not sure. I have to look at higher Lundquist numbers. And then the tunnel does not seem to occur for zero twist in flux tubes, even though it should energetically. And that's probably because the field lines just don't hit in the right places. So that's it.